It's really mucked up, I'm sure, your week, those of you who are playing a role in the Workers' Day and in the previous weekend's events as well, all throughout the country. Nevertheless, we do have our obligations as members of Parliament as well, but it is my intention, members, to try to complete the meeting as soon as possible, which would facilitate people being able to attend to other meetings as well. I'm looking at the challenges we have with, Honourable Khadebe, I'm looking for Honourable Salah, who was here a minute ago. Oh, thank you. Thank you. That's right. All right. Now, okay. Well, on that particular note, I would like to thank everyone for being here. We actually have one official apology that I'm aware of, a medical apology, and that is the Honourable Sue van der Merwe. As some of you know, she did have an operation to her shoulder or arm as a consequence of that attack, and I'm sure next week we'll be better briefed, Honourable Khadebe, as to when she will rejoin us. Am I right on that? Okay, so that's that. Advocate Alberts has sent us an apology. I am going to ask the Portfolio Committee Secretary to write to the IFP. When they have a full member, the full member is obliged to attend or give us an apology. And we have had a recurrent problem with two different members in that regard. And we were given an assurance this year that the full member would be in attendance. However, we are also aware that the member was some time ago in hospital, and he made an exigency appearance in the house, so we do, I think the letter would still be in order to make an inquiry in that regard. Thank you. So if that can be done today. On that note, we'd like to welcome the various people from DTI here, also Advocate Quetta from the State Law Advisor's Office, and Advocate van der Merwe from Parliament, the Parliamentary Legal Advisor, and of course other members who are here. We have the agenda before us, and let's have that adopted. It is our intention to finish as close as possible. I do have a request from the Honourable Mabasa to leave a little bit earlier, in other words, I suppose, when we have finished. And on that note, we'll certainly process the main items. Honourable Khadebe. We're just coming to order that, and we have other members who are in those overarching committees like ethics, for example, our whip, who also has to leave. Thank you. And I wonder if we're in the adoption of the agenda, and I'm saying this very carefully, if in this consideration here, we look largely at these recommendations you've put forward and the conclusion, so that is taken back and we don't consider the rest. So that's the basis of the agenda. I wonder if I'm explaining myself correctly. This is a very big report. I was not 100% happy on Tuesday because it wasn't, you know, it hadn't been edited, I felt, effectively to ensure there was a flow. And we asked for people to send their recommendations and for us to draft a conclusion. I don't see all of the recommendations here. That's the kind of thing I'm pointing to. And you do know what you all said. So on that basis, I'm asking us only to consider the conclusion and recommendations today. I hope I'm quite clear. Right. On that basis, can I have someone to adopt the agenda? Thank you, Honourable Mabasa, seconded by Honourable Kwabasa. Right. Right, members. In the time since we met on Tuesday, when we were deliberating on the Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Bill, which had been referred back to us, the position of the NHTL, the National House Traditional Leaders, we had received their response, but we wanted members to consult with their political principals on the matter. In that interim, I received somewhat late on that Tuesday, but which I got on Wednesday, because I had already left, I received a copy of a letter Dr. Wilmot James had sent to the Parliamentary Secretary, which I shall have distributed to all members now, because it directly relates to this and the ruling that I will make. The letter does indicate, make a reference to the NHTL, and does concur with the committee's position on Tuesday that there is no material difference. However, it raises another issue, and that issue, in terms of Rule 108(3) of the Rules and Orders of the National House of Traditional Leaders, when Parliament refers a bill to the National House, the Management Committee shall refer the bill to the relevant committee for consideration and reporting. 2, when a committee has considered a bill, it must write a report on the bill in which it indicates whether it supports the bill as introduced without amendments, supports the bill with amendments, or does not support the bill. 3, a committee report on a bill must summarise the committee process, including the number of meetings at which the bill was discussed, the participation of the provincial and local houses, and public hearings. Such committee report shall be tabled before the House for adoption before it is referred to Parliament. It is evident, Dr. James says, from the letter received on the 10th of April 2013, that the correct procedure was followed by the NHTL. Sorry, I wonder if I misread that. It is not evident. It is further concerning the comments received do not differ materially from the original comments presented in 2010, and in the light thereof, we request a clarification as to whether the NHTL in fact met to deliberate on the bill and whether such a meeting was in accordance with the rules. Now, you've all got this there before you. The important paragraph is the last one. It would be, in my sincere view, be in the best interests of the NTHL and traditional communities if the committee knew the views of the NHTL on the protection of the Traditional Knowledge Bill, which is a private member's bill that has been put before this House as well, before making a decision on the IPLAB. I therefore kindly request that the committee's decision scheduled for Thursday, the 2nd of May, 2013, be postponed until such time as the comments on both bills can be considered together. At the very least, no decision ought to be taken until clarity is forthcoming in respect of the procedural aspects outlined above. I've made the letter available to everyone. I'm now going to ask Advocate Charmaine van der Merwe, pursuant to the letter that the Honourable Dr. James, Wilmot James, wrote to the Parliamentary Secretary, is there any legal reason that you see as the advocate here in Parliament for us not to proceed on the matter?
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I may refer the members to the Traditional Leaders Governance Framework Act and Section 18, because that is what we're dealing with here, that referral. It reads that any parliamentary bill pertaining to customary law or customs of traditional communities must, before it is passed by the House of Parliament where it was introduced, be referred by the Secretary to Parliament to the National House of Traditional Leaders for its comment. The National House of Traditional Leaders must, within 30 days from the date of such referral, make any comments it wishes to make. Now, if we have regard to that section in the Act, there is no duty on the National House of Traditional Leaders to make comments, to start off with. It reads, any comments it wishes to make. So there is a discretion on the National House of Traditional Leaders whether they want to make comments to start off with. As to the procedure followed within the National House of Traditional Leaders, I would caution for Parliament to accept that a letter received was not done in the proper fashion. I'm not saying that it was or wasn't. I would simply caution, because what we have in front of us is a letter from the, if I refer to the letter from the National House of Traditional Leaders, it purports to be on their letterhead. It purports to be signed by the CEO of the National House of Traditional Leaders on the 10th of April 2013. It is not for Parliament to question whether proper procedures were followed. I think if there is a concern that the National House of Traditional Leaders is not following the correct procedure when considering parliamentary bills, that is a matter that must be taken up in another forum, because it is a serious concern if they are not following the correct procedure. But what Parliament has in front of it appears to be comments that the National House of Traditional Leaders wished to make in terms of 18.1b. And I can find nothing here that says that Parliament must inquire as to the process. In fact, that I would caution if we don't have actual support for that suspicion. In respect of the mention of the private members' bill and whether that should stop the current process, that is a decision that this committee must make. There is no legal requirement for a bill that is before a committee to be stopped in anticipation of a private member's bill. A private member's bill is to be handled, in fact, according to the Constitutional Court, in exactly the same fashion as an executive bill would be handled. So when this committee, this committee must slot it into its program at some stage, when the committee decides on its program, as it would do for an executive bill, it must treat the private members' bill in the same fashion. And this committee can then decide whether to consider the two at the same time, but there is nothing that requires this committee to do so. I think there is one aspect that the committee must keep in mind. I do understand that the bills deal with the same substance, and that would seem to make it beneficial to consider both at the same time. But I think the committee must also keep in mind that we have in front of us a bill that comes from 2010. It has been referred by the President because of interpretation concerns between our office and that of the Council of the President. We waited about 4 or 5 months before this committee was given an opinion on the changing of the tagging. So it is a bill that has been delayed considerably because of other situations or other factors that did play a role. And I think that is something that the committee must also consider when it weighs up what to do with the bill. Thank you.
I've got a few hands. I'd like to take our own the whip last, just in this regard. Honourable Mabasa.
Thank you very much, Comrade Chair, and thanks for the input from Advocate Van der Merwe. I'm also agreeing with the interpretation of Advocate Van der Merwe, because different constitutional bodies must be allowed to exercise their duties autonomously, so that it's just like us. We must be allowed to exercise our functionalities as parliament without other bodies implying that we have not done this and done that. What we should legitimately address is if within the committee, within parliament, if things have not been done properly, then that is the duty of the committee or parliament to say this has not been done properly. But it wouldn't be right for another body. It can't, there is no body that can, I mean another body that can pretend to be knowing what we are to do than we who are dealing with these matters every day. So I'm referring to the traditional body that we mustn't interfere. So I think we are doing the right thing, independently exercising our duty. And as for the second private members bill, I also agree with Advocate Van der Merwe. At any rate, we don't even have it before us, so it's still a speculation. So I would think we must not be unfair to the electorate. We must pass this as soon as possible. I will propose we pass it today. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Mabasa. Honourable Salah.
Honourable Chairperson, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to contribute in this important item. Two issues are involved here. One is that a newly introduced private members bill named the Protection of Traditional Knowledge Bill is intended to stop the bill that has gone through processes, that has gone up to the president, and that has been returned to be corrected in terms of another act. And that process now should be stopped by the introduction of a new bill. It doesn't sound proper. It doesn't at all sound proper. This bill, as introduced by the private member, or actually the member of this committee, not the private member per se, is a bill that we will need to consider in relation to traditional leaders' knowledge. We will have to consider that bill at some point in relation to traditional knowledge, the protection of traditional knowledge. At that time, we will go into details of what we mean by traditional knowledge and what is not protected there. At this stage, we are dealing with a different bill, and we are making corrections on that bill as referred to us by the president. That is what is happening. In my view, and I hope this is in the view of the ANC, that is that this bill must go through in the manner it has been referred to us. And we will deal with the other bill at a later stage. On the second issue relating to protection, relating to processes of the traditional house, traditional leader's house, our understanding is that that house represents the traditional leaders throughout the whole country. All traditional leaders are represented in this government or in this parliament by the House of Traditional Leaders. When we speak with that house, we speak with it on behalf of all traditional leaders. What they write to us, they write on behalf of all traditional leaders. Whether they have consulted with their traditional communities or not, we shall not know, because we will not access those communities without them. We must go through them even if we want to talk to those. But despite, we must be careful not to tread into areas where we are not supposed to. We cannot say, Chief, give us your people to go and say you have not done your work. We cannot do that. Thanks, Chair.
Just coming to the final comments from the Honourable James, and the Honourable Hadebe will close this.
Thank you very much, Chair. What we need to consider are both the procedural aspects and also the quality of what we do. And in terms of the requirement of the President to have the House of Traditional Leaders exercise its mind on the substance of the bill, it's very clear that it's not done that, because as far as we can tell, they didn't even meet to discuss the bill. And therefore, what we receive, so you're quite right, we can say, you know, a letter is fine, to send a letter along based on what was written 3 years ago. But to accept such a letter is to undermine the quality of what we do. So we have not had quality input from the House of Traditional Leaders precisely because they haven't exercised their mind on the question. And therefore, it compromises the quality, even though we are technically correct in a very narrow legalistic sense in terms of receiving a report. So I think it's a very poor argument. The second thing is to say that procedurally, you're quite right, the Privacy Amendment Bill is down the track, it's coming down, but it deals with the same subject matter. And what I believe, and I simply put it there, is that the current bill that we are now that we have now before is an inferior piece of legislation in terms of world opinion when it comes to intellectual property rights. The international property rights, legal and international community considers this piece of legislation being proposed as inferior and embarrassing internationally. And I just put it out there that what we need to do, and you will remember that what the Speaker said about legislation coming through Parliament, is that we must be proud of that legislation. And therefore, it's not simply about procedure, it's also about quality. So, but to say on the first point, that in terms of the process of the National House of Traditional Leaders, it's very clear that it has not exercised its mind on this question. It undermines the quality of what it is we do. Thank you very much.
Honourable James, Honourable Hadebe.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, I was worried. We were worried when Honourable Ambrosini raised this issue on behalf of the traditional leaders, because he does not belong to any traditional community. He does not understand what happens in those communities. That's why he brought this thing. So when the traditional, I can make an example, Chair. I'm a Khadebe, I'm a Subi. I've got a traditional leader, Langal Bale, Gudapon. I know what is happening there. So we know that for years, the colonists attacked that institution. It's very unfortunate that even now it is still being attacked by the colonialists. It's still being attacked by now. Because I don't understand, if someone will come here and stand and cast aspersions on what the traditional leaders are doing because they don't agree with them. We said initial, Chair, that one, the traditional leaders did make a submission on this bill. Number two, they did appear before the portfolio committee. Number three, the portfolio committee did go to those communities. What has happened throughout, it was consistent. Of course, I understand that someone who is sitting in France will never understand the dynamics of the communities of Africa. That's why they take it as inferior. So what is critical here, Chairperson? We have to accept that the traditional leaders have come back with the response which they came with even initially. So what is critical here? The opposition must not hold on to the straws. It's a fact that the traditional endorsed this bill even in the first instance. So we cannot cast aspersions on the way to do that thing. So what is critical here, Chair?
we have to process this thing. This thing is a referred bill back to Parliament. Since it is referred by the President, because of the technicality which was raised, that technicality was complied with, because the House Attorney does not agree with those people who proposed this, their referral, it does not mean that they didn't do their job. What is critical here is that we have to respect other institutions. That's the first instance. Those institutions were attacked for many years. That's why this constitution, which we are having in front of us here, protect that institution. So we cannot say that after they've done the way of doing things, the way the traditional communities do things, the way the so-called modern communities do things, is quite radically different. So we must respect that as the Parliament. So number two, Chairperson, the issue of the second bill, that bill, the private member's bill, it is in the process, Chairperson. It will come when it is right in front of us. We'll consider that. But for the time being, Chair, here it is. We have complied with this thing, and then we have complied. So what is critical here? We have to make a decision today so that we can move forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much, members, and thank you to Advocate Van der Merwe as well, as all those members who did contribute. Members, it indeed is extremely difficult on one hand to make a ruling here, to take a position, and on the other hand, it's very easy. It's very difficult on the one hand because one does want to ensure that by the time you get to this position on a piece of legislation or at the end of a process, you have reached some form of consensus. That is why it is difficult, you see. Because it is not where we would want to all be, as it were, at that ideal objective. However, it's very easy to make a ruling when one hears comments which I expect were made from people who are external, in other words, outside of the country, although I'd be surprised if it came from the members we spoke to at WIPO, that this is an inferior piece of legislation. That is the last thing that they said. In fact, it never entered their minds. What did enter their minds was that they would welcome South Africa, or at least one of the emerging and developing countries where these challenges arise, being able to codify and to put this into a piece of legislation. It would pioneer the way forward there. And so I have no doubt, because we said this when we took it to the National Assembly, this bill will, over time, be improved. We have stated that categorically. I have no doubt. In the same way that our own constitution, which was an interim constitution, was improved. We now have a constitution. But I do think, and I really want to persuade those members who are not prepared to accept the position as it stands, that there is a need for us to proceed. We need to be very cautious about questioning proceedings that took place in other bodies, as you referred to it, Honourable Mabaza, you know, here, because we allow the Constitutional Court to do that. Each House does have its rules and procedures, but we are at a point where our own rules, agreed to in this House, make it clear that we confine ourselves to the concerns raised by the President. No one disagrees that there is any material difference, doesn't? We all agree there. So in the final analysis, it appears to be a reliance on the processes, procedures that are being questioned in another House, and secondly, the fact that there is a private member's piece of legislation here. And I don't think that warrants us to be dissuaded from putting this to our vote for adoption. So I am going to proceed. The report of the portfolio, I hope that everyone has got this. Report of the Portfolio Committee, on Trade and Industry and the Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Bill. We've reconsidered that. It was referred to us by a resolution of the National Assembly adopted on the 14th of March 2013 and on the 15th of March for JTM and reclassified as a 76. And the committee's report dated the 6th. The committee concurred with the President's views. It is not a money bill and therefore does not fall under Section 77 of the Constitution. And further, having been advised by the JTM, agrees that the provisions of the bill substantially affect certain matters listed in Schedule 4 of the Constitution, in particular the traditional leadership and cultural matters, and should therefore be dealt with in terms of Section 76 of the Constitution. By resolution of the National Assembly adopted on the 14th of March 2013, the IPLAB 2010 was submitted to the JTM, we mentioned that again, for consideration, reconsideration of its classifications, and would be referred to the National House of Traditional Leaders for comment, announcements, and tablings reports 18th March 2013. In a letter dated the 10th of April 2013, the NHTL submitted its comments on the bill for consideration by the committee in accordance with Section 18.1 of the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act 2003, Act No. 41 of 2003. The committee, having considered the comments of the NHTL, the committee is of the opinion that the substance of the comments received from the NHTL does not materially differ from the original comments presented to the committee on the 20th of October 2010, and accordingly is satisfied that it has duly considered all comments made by the NHTL. I put it to the committee for adoption now. Though, can we please have someone who wishes to propose? The Honourable Khadebe.
I propose that the report be adopted.
Honourable Mabasa.
I second that the report be adopted.
What I would like to ascertain from the two of you before I take... Yes.
I second that the bill be adopted.
I just want to clarify this before we move to the second part of the adoption or the dissension. You'll see under number 5, after the committee deliberations, the question that I'm putting to those who proposed and seconded, do you propose this adoption without amendment?
Yes, sir.
And myself as well.
We then come to the point, I hope I'm correct, Mr. Hermans, to ask if there are any objections and comments.
Yes, I would like to object.
Honourable James, you have the right to make a comment, as you know, for the record.
My comment is that by adopting the bill, we are proceeding without quality comment from the House of Traditional Leaders.
As in addition to the report, we would reflect that the DA objected to the adoption of the report.
On the grounds?
We don't have, on the grounds that, Dr. James will give to me in terms of...
On the grounds that the House of Traditional Leaders did not exercise its mind after the President had requested a referral of the bill to them, and that we have not had the benefit of quality input from the House.
I'd like to advise you of one small amendment in your statement. I think you need to say you believe. You do not know that for a fact.
Thank you very much.
Members We've conducted the very serious part of this meeting. For those who had to go to another meeting, ethics and elsewhere, did you want to comment? I'm sorry.
Yes,
Honourable Hill-Lewis, because that's the comment from the party, but
yes,
you can comment for the committee.
Thank you. If we do adopt the report, I think we should just get the language correct in point number four. That first sentence is incorrect. Should read the committee, having considered the comments of the NHTL, is of the opinion. We take out the second, the committee.
I believe that we're still very collegial in trying to get things correct on that note. So it is now that I can release you, Honourable Debbie, because I know you're going to the ethics committee, which started an hour ago. Is that correct? It is. Thank you. Honourable Mabasa, we just need you for 5 minutes, that's all, 5 minutes. 5 minutes so that we can release you. And that is, we're not going to vote on the next part, but we are going to clean it up. You are now released, Honourable Mabasa.
You mean, may I leave now?
Yes.
Oh, thank you.
You don't sit in Manco, you see, so I can't expect you to know what we've decided.
Yes.
So we're not delaying you.
I knew that the first minister would come 5 times 10.
All right. I just need to clarify something with Mr. Hermans on this matter going forward. That is the next item. We're just going to go. Margot, are you in the hot seat here overhead? Okay. You're in the hot seat there, so we can carry on. We are going to the next item, the consideration, but as I said, I've had a quick look at it. We haven't received everything, so we're not able to adopt it. So we're in the process of consideration, the first consideration. If you look at it there, the first thing I'd like you to go to are the recommendations before you do this. And to those who made recommendations, I believe your recommendations are not captured. That's why I'm coming here. You made recommendations, Honourable Hill-Lewis.
Chair, they are captured in the form of conclusions. That 8.1 is my recommendation, but the others are in the conclusion section. I just wanted to ask the question at the appropriate stage as to what the difference is in the status of a conclusion versus a recommendation.
I also was questioning that, so let's go back to the conclusion then, please. All right. Now remember, members, this is just the technical team having put this together, so you know, you're able to do what you wish with it. But we've got here, in the first instance, having considered, I don't think we have a serious substantive issue with that first paragraph. So let's go on to the 6.1. Now let me explain the difference, or you know how we've looked at conclusions and recommendations. Just, it's important not to have a shopping list of recommendations. Otherwise, nothing is done. You know, what exactly are the important issues? So if you're going to go with recommendations and you find you've got 12, however, they classify into three areas. One is to do with staff. The other is to do with X and Y. You're able to group them and you have then three recommendations. Do you follow? And it has been our practice, I think, Margot, I'm looking at you, to limit our recommendations to about 3 or 4. Yeah, on that basis. So now if we come to yours, let's take the issue and decide. Are we merely making a conclusion, as it were, just a statement, or do we want something done? That's the question you must ask yourself. All right, so please raise your issue.
I'm happy with all of the concluding remarks except for one, and that's 6.6, where I've recommended that this committee hold a follow-up workshop with those role players. I think that that is something that we should actually have something done on, and therefore I'd appreciate if that could be moved back into the recommendation section. And I'm just quickly running my eye over the others. That's all fine. It's 6.6, Chair, where I'm concerned, and I'd like it moved back to 8.
Yeah, look at the 6.6. We must be careful that we don't find ourselves dealing with the detail in the per se. Let's just see, an engagement. This is what you're recommending that Parliament adopt, remember, to 6.6a, between National Treasury and the Department of Cooperative Government and Traditional Affairs is critical, an engagement, to discuss the funding of local government, as well as the extent to which municipalities are charging exorbitant electricity surcharges to raise revenue. The committee may consider holding a colloquium itself with the relevant stakeholders. Now there's, you know, the committee may, I think, is a comment which could well go into the conclusion, that last little bit, that last sentence, okay? Number one is the kind of proposal one would make. Because your recommendation to the House is to get something changed, at the end you may put the kind of things we want to pursue and put them all together. But when it comes to the funding, I'm just trying to consider it. What you're asking for, we did agree that they are exorbitant, these electricity charges. So what is it that we can ask Parliament, you know, to adopt? Because the moment Parliament adopts it, it basically becomes like a law. It's got to move on. Do you follow what I'm saying? So I'm not saying no at this point. I'm asking us to get our heads around it. Very serious when you do that. Honourable Salah, but keep it there. I'm not telling you to take it off. Yes, Honourable Salah.
Chairperson, reading the essence of the last sentence of 6.6 with 8.1, reading it with 8.1, says to you that the matter will be covered by 8.1 as it stands. Because we do not lose that matter. You put it in the conclusion that the committee may consider holding a colloquium with the relevant stakeholders to find a solution to this problem. And down there you're saying the committee of the cabinet committee,
yeah,
that must deal with this must include the ministers of trade and industry, energy, transport and finance, which would say to you that in dealing with this, they would look at what the committee's conclusion should be, because we'll be taking it away from you to becoming our conclusion.
You see, you've got part of what we do require, the way you're looking at it, is the right way. I don't entirely, you see, our own committee secretary is making certain proposals here, and his is informed by rules and processes itself, so we don't want to move too far away from what he's saying, and I'll just read what, in fact, you can mention that yourself when I'm finished speaking, Mr. Hermans. You see, I do think there's a need in a recommendation to, cost reduction committee does take that into account to a certain extent. And because it's looking at the funding per se. Now, in reducing costs, you have to take into account funding at the same time in order to reduce it. Is the allocation efficient? Is it? That's the question you ask when you're doing a cost reduction. Is the expenditure efficient? So, you know, that's part of your cost reduction committee principles. But I get, you know, the recommendation here, I think, needs to look at things very seriously. Does the committee want to consider saying municipalities are doing this, they are charging exorbitant rates, some of them. Okay. They are. That's a fact. And manufacturing, some of these smaller places are closing down and you're losing jobs. Now, that's a fact. Now, are we saying that something has to be done to ensure that municipalities do their rates, their costs, what the charges, the fees that they put onto their electricity for these manufacturing concerns need to be discussed so that it does not, or measures should be taken or factored in that do not impact on job losses? You know, is that not what we are really saying? We don't want job losses. We want manufacturing to continue. So I'm asking us to try and put it another way. Now, I know that these are the other jurisdictions, but surely we can say here, and I'm asking you, Mr. Hermans, to think about this as well and before you respond, can't we say to the municipalities that before you exercise and pass on these exorbitant fees, you've got to take into account the impact on job losses. You've got to do that. You've got to take into the account that our priority is to create manufacturing, to reindustrialize. Can you not say that? Because it seems to me some of the municipalities are using these companies as cash cows for other issues, to cross, cross fund, cross subsidize other areas. How is that going to help if your people are out unemployed? Do you see what? I'm just saying we need perhaps to put it differently. Can you come in here, please?
In terms of point 6.6, when a committee make recommendations, this is an internal process. We cannot recommend to the House that we must have a colloquium, because that's the internal process that the committee can make a decision on.
Yes.
Now, in terms of what you are saying, that will be a decision that the committee can take. We must be aware that the Department of Corporate Affairs and Traditional Affairs is another jurisdiction, and can we as a committee give a recommend to the House on relating to that is not in the mandate of DTI. So we must be careful when we make those kind of recommendations. The principle that point 6 is saying is let's have the discussion what Mr. Hillwood, what the member is proposing. We as a committee may have a colloquium to discuss, and then in another process we then can, in consultation with COPTA and National Treasury, they are part of the process, we can then propose something forward. But that's an internal process that we can determine as a committee.
So it is quite a challenge,
though. I think Mr. Newman's intervention was very useful. I mean, the essence of it is we all agree on the problem, we all agree on what's happening, and I think the essence of the recommendation is that noting that problem, noting that significant crisis, we need to have the discussion. Now, I completely understand when Mr. Herman says we can't ask the House to agree to instruct us to have a colloquium because we can just do that ourselves. So perhaps then on that basis it can just stay there as a concluding remark, so long as that we agree that among our very hectic work schedule already, we try to find time to have this discussion as well, because I do think it is a critical discussion.
Last point, though, which you didn't raise necessarily, 6.8. Under conclusions, the necessary regulatory environment and a developmental pricing regime should be created. That can be a recommendation. Can. You're all asking for a principle to be implemented. The necessary regulatory environment and a developmental pricing regime should be created to encourage. That's a principle you're asking to be adopted. Who put that forward? Doesn't really matter at this stage. But I think we would all agree on that. Why shouldn't that be a recommendation? You see? Should be to encourage the beneficiation. Your whole issue here was on admin prices. Now, you have dealt with that in the recommendations, okay? Somewhere in the conclusion, what should be noted is what has already transpired since when we first started, that in the admin side, after the engagement with Transnet, they did agree to revise the fee structure, and that is being implemented, and you promised to get us the date, because they've given us the date when this is going to, because that's already a positive in the conclusion, and we started this in October, November, December, January, February, March. In 6-7 months, it's happened, you see. So I think that's a very good idea. The other issue is, you've got to capture this issue that with the bulletin thing, you know, which they are getting these special prices, but are they bringing, what are they actually contributing? They are bringing and creating more jobs. What else are they doing? And you remember we asked them, certainly I did, and we asked others to do the same thing. Please can they expand their training facilities to support or help related manufacturers or industries, and if necessary, with public sector support, you know, with government, because there is that, the various approaches now. So, they've got the training facilities. Please can they expand these to support smaller, perhaps we could say smaller manufacturers and entities, people who don't have the same training facility available. Now that applies across the board. But it's not just BHP Billiton you're asking. Yes, you note, what you can note in the recommendation, it's quite clear that they have excellent facilities along with Transnet and some of those in the mining sector. So, for example, BHP Billiton, if they can all consider expanding these as soon as possible, you don't want this still to be for them to be thinking about it in a year's time. But you must bring the public sector into it as well. They can't do it alone necessarily. You need public and private support. The other aspect which came out, which I never saw in this report, we kept on saying there was a need for public and private. It's more the parastatals, what do you call them, parastatals in SOEs that need to be jumping. Those are the ones that need to jump. And what are they doing? We do know they've got nice boardrooms and they're getting lots of big salaries. But apart from the big salaries and the boardrooms, what else are they doing, you see? And I don't think you need to put it in that way about big salaries and boardrooms, but you know, you need to make it clear that the peristatals and SOEs are instruments, were always intended as instruments to help grow and expand the economy and create jobs. And, you know, they, it would, what we do need to do is to follow up with them and perhaps for sister committees, other committees. There's that committee on private, public enterprises could consider, you know, looking into the matter to, because we can't do it alone. Yes.
When you speak about the SOEs and parastatals, it takes me back to
6.8. Yeah.
But is it not that we have NERSA already
yeah.
as a regime that has been created to encourage
yeah.
distance? Is NERSA not part of that regulatory environment? Well, I'm not sure, because this thing refers to the NERSA regulatory environment and developmental pricing regime. I think the key word is pricing, and this price is about electricity, if I'm not wrong.
So I think when you mention NERSA, we want, of course NERSA is there, but we want others as well. You know who? There is no such regulatory regime for admin prices. There isn't. They all do their own thing, don't they? You know, and then you try to run around all of them. Now, electricity, we know, is NERSA energy. But what about these other admin costs? So maybe that's, in some way, that could be factored in, because we do have NERSA as well. And all of that will then one day be factored into this entity, that structure that Honourable James referred to. What was it, a cost reduction structure?
Committee
or something, yeah. Honourable Hildewis?
But you see, Chairperson, the issue is not whether we have a regulator, because we have NERSA. But the issue is a fundamental discussion around the mandates of those state-owned enterprises. Because, you see, NERSA cannot, they work under the paradigm of an adequate return on investment, an adequate profit. And the debate has been, as you know, whether that should be 4% or 8% or 9 billion or 20 billion or whatever the case is. But when you start talking about using state-owned enterprises to drive the developmental pricing model, then you need to have a discussion about the mandate of those regulators, because then they need to make their decisions based on a different framework. And I think that's the essence there.
I think it makes sense, you know. Honourable Kwabasa, do you agree with the broad thinking there? It does. You see, and I think we're bringing things together here, and it's going to be unfortunate we won't be having the bulletin to put in at this point, because it's way after 10 and it's not ready, and we can't even get hold of them, unfortunately. So I see the consultant sitting here. Yep.
May I come in, Madam Chairman, if you don't mind? We have tried contacting the Chairman's office. A few minutes ago, they told us they'll be sending the report through to Mr. Hermans in 10 minutes. But we have indicated to them the concern you've expressed, because you did agree to 10 o'clock this morning with the Chairman yesterday evening.
It should have been in on Tuesday, and we created this mini extension till 10 o'clock, and unfortunately others did not get the same extension they had to send their material in within the next 2 hours and so on. But what we do have to do is to look at the conclusion again, because I think our conclusion, the main thrust of our conclusion, is only coming about now in some of the statements that are being made. You made a few right now, Honourable Hill Lewis. That has to be the thrust. What did we look at? What was our objective? What measures did we take to, you know, try and reach those objectives? What was the objective? The objective is actually to try and bring about what someone has now said, a regulatory environment, a more enabling one, conducive to manufacturing, developmental pricing, bringing the public and the private sector together to ensure that strategic skills are being developed. We don't have sufficient training areas right now. They aren't. That's the reality. How can this come to the fore? Because you can create and develop other smelters and these things, but you need the skills on the job, and we don't have them as we talk. How quickly can we put them into place? The one area we didn't look at that much was transport per se, other than port charges, as you know. And the report needs to make it clear that we could not interrogate the whole of the transport environment, you know, etc. So we earmarked port charges because they were and are the highest contribution to this, the input costs. The second thing we looked at in detail was electricity, because they were the highest in terms of energy per se. The third one that we were looking at were all these intermediaries in between wanting to add their little percentage, such as municipalities, so that they could also make some money out of what appeared to be an easy opportunity, and loading again, using it for cross-subsidization. Now, with all of this, you're now having a situation where the pricing, what do you call it, the volatility of the currency also plays its role. But that is not really, I don't think you can honestly argue for that to be directly related to the matter under discussion. But is there anything else that you can think of which you would regard as the impediment we identified and some of the measures we're proposing? I thought one of them that you all agreed on was that there's a total lack of alignment and people not talking to each other. That's why you were talking about, I don't know, cost cutting committees, you were talking about colloquiums, you know, you were talking about fora to bring people together. The question I must ask you before we close off the report for editing and adoption early next week on Tuesday is to say, do we not have too many fora? Now, they say we've got NEDLAC. Is NEDLAC not supposed to deal with this? If we say it is supposed to, why do we want another one? You know, you've got to give reasons. You can't just keep on establishing things. The second thing, well, I think the cost reduction committee's got to stay there, all right. So we're not arguing about that per se. Then you're arguing about, or not arguing, proposing that people all come together in yet another fora. Now, the question I'm putting to you is, do you want all these fora? The same people are sitting there. They're not going to be implementing a damn thing while they sit in committee. Now, you see, that's what the ministers tell us now, and the DGs, they're sitting here in Parliament, and then you tell us you want us to do X. So if you're asking for all of this, are you not asking rather for departments, for the private sector, etc., to utilize the existing fora such as X and Y and Z, and we mention them, more effectively to deal with the issues we are putting on the table? Is that not what you are asking, or do you just want to keep on creating? Now, I must put this to you honestly, because it is a problem that I've seen happening in the last 4 years in Parliament, that we recommend all these fora. They all take place and cost money. Yes, Honourable Salah.
I agree with you, Chairperson, on the homework you've given us, but I also believe that we should have a homework on the issue of transport. Transport for what? Is it for manufacturing, or is it for delivery of production, irrespective of? And what type of transport are we focusing on? The air transport, the rail transport, the land transport? Which of these transports are we looking at, basically? Just to have a clearer mind of what we refer to as transport, because transport includes our own feet as well. You know, donkey carts, bicycles, everything that can make you move from point A to point B is transport.
I'm going to leave it there and just take last comments now. Is your last comments, recommendations, you name it, Honourable Hill Lewis?
Chair, just quickly cast my over 8.1 again, and I've noticed I've left out the Department of Public Enterprises, which is, of course, crucial.
Okay. On the point you've just made, Honourable Salah, you see, I think that transport itself has to deal with that. We have a we have a committee, you know, and just like energy, etc. But what we may wish to do, remember, IPAP resides here. We may wish to say within IPAP, which we have said before, and it hasn't really happened. The intention was that IPAP would bring together all the departments and entities in a manner that would reduce the misalignment, in a manner that would reduce duplication, and bring them all strategically on board in the same direction, complementing each other. Now, the question that arises now, 4 years down the line, are departments and entities working effectively together on this? You know, it's an agreed priority. It's agreed priority instrument, Industrial Policy Action Plan. I don't believe they are, and I'm saying this as chair, and if you believe so, please say so. I think we've got to start encouraging them again to work together more effectively.
I would say we've got to lead that process, not to encourage.
Before we close this off now and say that we want this report in our electronically everywhere tomorrow, electronically, so that already Manco can be looking at it early next week and we factor it in for adoption. If anyone dreams up a new recommendation, I want to see it by Friday. So... have you just dreamt one up, Honourable Elvis?
He doesn't really take a shower.
That's what worries me, you see.
Chair, I just wanted to say as a general comment on the whole report and the whole process, which has been a several-month process, I think it's been incredibly useful. The whole colloquium process, all of the engagements that we've had have been incredibly useful. I want to thank you very much for initiating that that process and that discussion, and ask you to please do so again in the coming years, because it really has been very fruitful. And it was great to get the main culprits in the room looking at each other eye to eye, and to get them to actually explain, you know, be accountable right now in this committee. And I think that's what we have. You're right, we're quite right. We have all these fora, but we all beat around the bush in all of those fora, and we chit-chat and do a lot of other nonsense, but we don't get down to the core issues, and we certainly did do that in this colloquium, so thank you.
Well, I think it's thanks to the members for their robust engagement and the fact that all of these very large entities, such as Transnet, Eskom, NERSA, and the like, plus all the small ones, you know, that was what was so interesting. Small manufacturers also came. But that under your focused oversight, they had to concur that we could not go on like that. And we did get a change from Transnet. I think that that was one of the bigger achievements. Secondly, the electricity which you highlighted, Honourable Hill Lewis, at that time, but when you interrogated all those models, you know, bringing your economic background from the university to the fore, assisted us in also asking questions. Our WIP, being cognizant of the importance of jobs in rural areas and how some of the municipalities were cross-subsidizing through the electricity, and so you were losing these jobs. I think he brought it, but there isn't a member. Honourable Salah raised certain issues on transport, and Honourable Kwabasa on the admin side of what was going on with the development, you know, the pricing. And I think that we must put this in a slightly revised introduction, that we did it for this purpose. This is what our objective was. We did achieve this, but we have still a long way to go in X, which is really what we are saying. And we do need to hold this again. And it is going to be difficult to, but perhaps there may be room at the end of the year, if time is extended, or early next year, just to have a three-day whip around to close off. Because this is our main mandate, IPAC. And we sometimes forget that. It is. So I'm sure, Honourable Ms. Naidoo, you are keeping that, you're going to inform the Minister on that. Just to remind the members, we've got our own budget vote on the 15th of May. Are we all aware of that? Right, please don't forget that, because apparently they're not going to be rejigging anything any longer. Am I right? Yeah, that's right. And on that note, you know, my hour has been reduced to 1 minute, so the meeting is adjourned. Please get out your minutes for next week. We want a quick whip through as soon as we meet. When is our meeting next week, Mr. Thurman?
The meeting on Tuesday next week.
What time?
At 9:30. On Tuesday.
On Tuesday.
I don't have the program in front of me, but we're looking at this report that we report. We also may be looking at the first draft of our budget vote, the meetings that we had in the past.
Sure. All right, so it's the budget vote. Right, thanks. Honourable Hill Lewis?
Yeah, Chair, I must just chat to our caucus leadership, or maybe Honourable James can help here right now, but the morning EPCs, we are required to attend those.
Well, you've added something. the ANC is in the same challenge you are as well. And that this committee, I don't know again, Honourable James, if you got that information as you know, present in the party and playing a key role there, but that this committee has been classified back to what it was originally classified, and that is a strategic full-time committee, and that members who sit here have to prioritize this. And I have personally been told as chair that we will sit if we are doing legislation. But of course, parties may take certain other decisions. Honourable James?
Ours would be the same as yours,
okay,
in terms of an approach. If it clashes with caucus, that's another matter, but it doesn't.
And just to remind members, we had 7 pieces of legislation. We now have 8. Just so that you're right on board. Thank you. Meet.